Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Chad, a very, very good morning to you. Good morning.
Yes, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Fine, thanks, and you?
Excellent. So why do you guys keep such a low profile? I'm fairly well read, and I had never heard the word herpetologist until now.
Really? Okay. No, herpetologists actually quite like the limelight,
Really? I'll be honest. Oh, so you're not hiding under a rock or anything? Ha ha.
No, no, I don't think so. I think we just try to keep the word hidden because it's quite a strange word and guys get a bit confused.
Yes. Well, I saw that when I on my run and I thought, hold on, is this something we should be talking about with kids in the car? And then... And then I looked it up and I realized what it is. So what is it? What is a herpetologist?
So a herpetologist basically is someone who studies reptiles and amphibians.
Right. Okay. So it's obviously absolutely vital. It's vital. But somehow we're a little afraid of them. They make us a little uncomfortable, don't they?
Yes, they do. There's a massive amount of stigma associated with reptiles and amphibians in this country, yeah.
All right. So and there are many, many misconceptions, aren't there?
Yeah, there's quite a few actually, yeah.
All right. Tell us some of them.
Well, there's a big misconception about, for example, chameleons. Mm-hmm. Chameleons, obviously, which are lizards that that have lived and adapted to live in trees, they're completely harmless. But a lot of people do think that they are dangerous or they're venomous or poisonous, and they can bring harm to people. But actually, they're actually completely harmless. And if you had to pick one up, which I don't advise doing because they're quite delicate.
Right.
Nothing would happen whatsoever.
So that's interesting because we really do. We're very, very afraid. Is it because, do you think, of maybe their silence? Is it because they look otherworldly? What is it that makes us so uncomfortable or so afraid of them?
Well, yeah, with reptiles and amphibians in general, often people are scared of them because they're associated with danger of some of them. So obviously, you know, some snakes are dangerous and they're venomous. Some frogs have got poisons that people assume they all have. It's easier than learning which ones are dangerous, just to assume mm-hmm. they all are.
Right, yeah. And are they endangered? I mean, do we have a lot of endangered species in South Africa?
Yeah, actually we do. We have several endangered species, but we're actually lucky because we have a lot of species to begin with. So of the many species we have, only a fraction of them actually are endangered. And there are a lot of organizations right now that are working really, really hard to keep them safe. People are putting effort into them, and if you're part of the right channels, you'll see there's a lot of work going into them.
Mm. So, and which are the ones that we need to be concerned about?
Well, it's depending on the province you're working in, but I can give you just a little rundown. In terms of the frog, there's quite a few frogs. Obviously, frogs are associated with water sources, and when water becomes polluted or endangered, we can lose them. So things like the Amatola toad, that lives in Hogsback in the Eastern Cape. That's an endangered one. The Table Mountain ghost frog that lives in the waterfalls of Table Mountain National Park in Cape Town. In terms of snakes, you get the Albany adder, which lives in the PE region, and that one's very much endangered because it only lives in such a tiny little space. So people are putting a lot of effort into these animals to try and protect them. And often it's not the animal being killed that's making them endangered. It's rather they live in a very small space to begin with. And people are constantly trying to build new things and develop, and this encroaches upon their territory.
And what I find interesting is many years ago, just because we're good parents, my one kid was particularly fascinated by snakes, and we got quite into that whole story. I didn't know until then that you can't own indigenous snakes, that he had two American corn snakes, for example. Why is that? Why do we have this policy of separating indigenous from non-indigenous when it comes to people involved in this?
Yeah, there's quite a few reasons, but one of the biggest reasons is probably going to be that when something's indigenous, people can take it out of the wild and then they can keep it as a pet. And if you translocate that animal to a new area, which some people do, they get bored and they get rid of this animal, it messes with the population structuring and the genetics.
Ah,
so if you take a snake from, let's say, Eastern Cape, you drop it in Gauteng, it's going to start mating and passing on diseases and to other snakes, and it's very dangerous. But if a corn snake got out, which sometimes does happen, let's say in Gauteng, the snake has no ability to breed with other snakes, nor is they going to come in contact with them because it's most likely going to be killed by a predator or die. So it has no, it doesn't really bear risk to the community. But when something's indigenous, it can, that's why
can
you get
mess up the whole system, right.
Yeah, so like invasive species. So not many guys know that these tropical house geckos you get down in Cape Town and Lower Eastern Cape, they're not actually supposed to be there. And they've actually hitchhiked a ride on people's bags from holidays from the KZN region. That's just an easy example to see why some of these geckos are almost everywhere, and that's because they're able to survive on houses all over the country, but they're actually only supposed to be in certain parts of the country.
Jenny wants to know, do reptiles make good pets?
Personally, I study reptiles and I look for them and things. I don't think they make the best pets.
Right.
Mainly because they don't really care. They're completely ambivalent to human
beings. Oh, really? Because that's different to a cat.
So they're not like cats and dogs. They don't perceive affection the same way as we do.
Right.
They're very much neutral. They don't want to hurt us, nor do they care if we touch them. They're just kind of trying to go about their own business. So if you're looking for something affectionate, a snake isn't one, or a reptile, anything. But if you're looking for a pet that does virtually nothing, I imagine a reptile would be quite a good pet.
Yeah, listen, but then you might as well buy a rock.
Rocks might be more. Yeah.
So what is it then that attracts? I mean, I have no idea what attracted my son, for example, to it. He was drawn to it. He was fascinated by it. But what is it? Is it that draws people to own reptiles as pets? It's not something I really can understand.
Reptiles, because they're not like mammals, they look very different. They've got interesting structures. They've got like horns and they've got long tails and they've got beautiful colors. And because snakes don't have legs, they're completely different to us and they navigate the world in a completely different way to us. So it absolutely fascinates people, and some kids just get the bug. When I was a child, I was obsessed with them to my parents' dismay. They weren't so stoked at the fact that I wanted to keep snakes. Some people just love them, and unfortunately, a lot of people just don't. And what ends up happening is that people kill them out of fear. But the whole goal of herpetology, in addition to finding new species and learning about them, is to try and show people that snakes aren't our biggest enemy. It's actually a misconception.
And how does one go about becoming a herpetologist?
In this country, there's a few institutions. So obviously, once you go through high school, you can go to university and you can take up a science degree in zoology. Once you get through undergraduates, you can start specializing. And there's quite a few herpetologists based all around the country. They will be happy to take you on and supervise you. And it's more of a specialization you do after undergrad university than an actual program you can do. There are several programs you can do around the country, but most times you get picked up by a herpetologist or a supervisor. They kind of groom you, and then once you get your degree, you would go off and do your own thing.
Absolutely fascinating. Certainly, I have learned something this morning. Herpetologist Chad Keats from Rhodes University, thank you for chatting to us this morning. It is 7:27. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.